Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
Oh, am I the most underrated voice? I don't know anymore. I believed it when I recorded that with Mrs. O, but I'm not sure. I'm really not. Am I underrated? Am I unwanted? Does anybody give a crap? Who cares? It's Friday night. How about that? The 23rd day of December, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is the show you were looking for. Only reason why I know that is because you found it and you're hearing me babble. So there you go. And thankfully, you won't have to hear me babble all night because for the next 2 hours, I've got a co-host with me, B. Pete. And I'm always glad he's here because I need somebody a little more sane than myself on Fridays to wrap up the week, whatever the week that was. But anyway, he's with us, and you listening, if you're hearing us live on the 23rd of December, 2022, just a little bit after 8 p.m. Eastern time, you can call in at 319-527-5016. That is 319-527-5016. And, 1-6, 1-6 at the end of it, right? Did I plan it? No. 319-527-5016. Seems like that's all the MSM wants to talk about is 1-6, yeah? Yeah? You guys want to talk about that? I don't want to talk about a bunch of things, but I'm probably going to blurt some stuff out. But before we get there, and before I give priority to the new callers, oh, you can also reach out to me on Skype if you like. Charles.Ocelli, you send me a message, and I can call you into the show. Which, by the way, they finally upgraded the Skype so that I can add phone numbers in now, too, which is a function it had 2 or 3 years ago, and they somehow stopped it, and now it's working again. So, I don't know how or why, but here we are. Anyways, BP. I got a lot of random things on my mind, but I'd love to hear about what's on your brain as we get just about, let's see, we're only a couple hours away from when it's Christmas Eve for everybody, right? How you doing?
Yeah, man? Christmas Eve. Well, I don't know, not really in the Christmas spirit this year. Kind of, I don't know, we'll call it a working holiday. We got a lot going on in the job. Supposed to be shut down for the next 2 weeks, but that's not going to happen. Oh, but other than that, we've hit this Arctic blast. We're freezing our collective nuts off around here. It really is cold, and it's been windy all day. It's been like 50-mile-an-hour gusts, so we got that great northern ice train that's come all the way down to the south. I'm sure it's hitting you guys down there in Georgia a little bit, too.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. We're going to be at about 10 degrees sometime in the next few hours, according to the prognosticators.
But, well, this morning I heard it was like -8 in Chicago and the wind was blowing 60 miles an hour. And I thought, who in the hell would want to live in Chicago?
Well, you see, now there you go. If you're far enough north, BP, and I know you've lived in other parts of the world, but quite honestly, you know, this kind of weather when I was in Jersey, this is the kind of thing I expected for 3-4 months. And, you know, it was just like this. You go outside, the ground is frozen solid. Anything that's liquid, you know, you can pee, and you know, and I've done this many times, peeing outside. I'm a guy. Before your urine hits the ground, it turns to ice because the air is so cold, right? Literally, I've done this. All right, it's not often, but it happens.
Some of us are easily amused.
Well, I considered that pretty amusing, especially after a long night of drinking. I'm sitting there going, I'm making ice cubes before it hits the ground. That's pretty cool.
Well, tell you what, we really don't have to go far tonight to top that.
I know it. But, you know, okay, anyway, it's cold. It's the kind of cold that reminds me of Jersey because the ground
is
frozen.
It is, but, I mean, if you think about it, what, the solstice was yesterday?
Well,
so,
two
you know,
days
shortest
ago.
Day, you expect it to be wintertime. You know, it's Christmas. It should be wintertime.
Well, two days ago, just for the record, 2 days ago, because the 21st, which also happy birthday, Maria Heller, cause she's a winter solstice baby. And, 21st. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I've always wondered about Christmas in places like Australia below the equator, you know, where it's warm and it's their summertime and somehow our songs just wouldn't work down there, you know, talking about snow and sleighs and they're out there in bikinis on the beach. It's just weird.
But don't get started anyway. On that, because you know what? I end up having biblical arguments with people about exactly what a Palestinian winter is like. Because, you know, obviously Bethlehem is in, you know, Palestine. So.
Oh yeah, but they get snow, what? Every couple of years they get snow there, don't they?
Oh yeah, but the winters are actually very brutally cold at night in December, yeah. Which is really weird. Like people don't think of it because they're like, well, that's like the desert, right? Now, yeah, but it doesn't always remain hot in the desert, okay?
Well, it gets cold at night in parts of Arizona and New Mexico and Nevada.
Well, and there's also differences in elevation because, you know, Colorado, right? I mean, when is it not cold? Yeah. In the mountains, okay? You know what I'm saying? And even when you got a summer day going on, you could have snow in the mountains because of the different elevation.
Well, that is one thing I appreciate growing up is we lived Rocky Mountains. We lived in Colorado and in Utah and Salt Lake City. Mm. So I got a chance to see the Rockies before my parents dragged me begrudgingly east to the Appalachians, which, yeah, they're mountains, but they're not really. So, you know, being able to live in that environment in the wintertime was a big difference than here. I mean, your whole winter was based on winter sports and, you know, hockey and snow and skiing. And right. Here, you know, you get used to this section of North Carolina that we're in that's too close to the coast to really see snow. Although it's strange, some of the biggest snows we've had have come right around Christmas time or in February and March. Hmm. It's strange. But at Christmas, I remember, what was it, 2010, I believe it was, the day after Christmas, we had a 2-foot snowfall here. It was amazing.
Wow. I mean, I was there for like a 1-inch kind of thing, and I got to say this for the people of North Carolina, they didn't freak out as much as people do in Georgia.
Well, the further south you go, imagine New Orleans, you know.
Well,
they
yeah.
would freak.
And I'll never forget being in North Carolina and getting this, you know, newsflash about the ice apocalypse, they were calling it, right? See, this thing is a snow apocalypse, you know, big giant, what do they call it? Also a winter storm bomb. A bomb storm?
Oh, yeah, a cyclone bomb or
cyclone
something.
Cyclone bomb,
I don't know.
Yeah.
They've come up with something every year.
They always come up with some kind of terrifying, the weather is brutal, you know. And okay, cool. But, yeah, when they had the ice apocalypse here in Georgia, it was hilarious because all of a sudden, these people were not prepared for it, and all of a sudden, you know, there was a lot of sheets of ice on the major highways.
Oh, yeah, the whole beltline around Atlanta froze up.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just stranded. People just left their cars. They couldn't
move. They left their cars
move.
And walked away. And I'm sitting there looking at it going, now, in Jersey, that would be like, oh, well, you know what? It's a week before Thanksgiving, so of course the road looks like that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's normal. People driving that. You start to get people staying home when they're like, look, it's 6-8 inches of snow out there. So I'm worried that, you know, my car's going to stop working because, you know, it gets up too high and your car's too low. You got you know, those kind of things will keep people in the house. But otherwise, you know, nobody cares. It's just like, hey, okay, let's go out in the snow. No big deal. Here they freak out. Little bit of ice, and they can't handle it. They can't drive on it. They crash into each other. They run the cars off the road, and people are walking away from their vehicles. Just, I'm going to leave it there. And they had to come back some days later, I guess.
Well, now, I don't, yeah. You know, I've been up north in the snow. I've been out west in the snow. I've seen people drive in the snow in Europe. The problem with people around here is, yeah, they can drive in the snow. They just can't stop. They don't understand yeah. the loss of friction when it comes to applying brakes.
Yep.
And they'll get going, and then, whoops, one little misplant on the brake pedal, and they're sideways. And they don't yep. know what to do. You know, they don't leave enough distance. That's what kills me about people around. People around here drive bad enough in good weather. Mm-hmm. You throw a little bit of inclement weather on top of it. I don't care if it's a driving rain. These people are idiots when it comes to driving.
See, now,
and
it's funny.
I don't know what it is.
Right.
I don't know if it's because they haven't driven anywhere else and around here. But these people are atrocious.
People are stupid everywhere. People are stupid everywhere. Because even in Jersey, where we're used to it, right? I'll tell you something. Many, many times during the course of a day, if you're out in a car all day, you'll see, you know, a bunch of people sliding through the, you know, red lights because they can't stop. They didn't, you know, take into account it was going to take longer to stop. So they were doing, you know, going too fast and trying to stop as if there is no snow or ice on the ground. And they'll go sliding through the intersections. the difference between up there and, say, what I would see in North Carolina is that the other drivers knew how to avoid the guy sliding through the intersection, right? It'd be like, traffic really didn't stop, even though this guy came flying through sideways in his freaking, you know, like, you'd see minivans a lot of times doing this, where it's like, that thing goes through there sideways, and everybody keeps going, and they just work around it. It's no big deal. North Carolina, that minivan's getting hit.
These people, look, these people can't even handle a four-way stop. You know, the route that I take to work, I drive about an hour and a half to get to a job site, and I take a highway. It's a North Carolina highway. It's a good-sized road, but they have installed 5 four-way stops to keep from having to redesign intersections.
Right.
And that way they figure, well, if everybody has to stop, then it'll be less wrecks. Well, no, not really, because the idiots do not know how to handle traffic at a four-way stop. They don't know when to go. Or they don't stop and they just go plowing through. And yeah, it might reduce the number of T-bone accidents, but it sure doesn't help a lot of them.
See, now, never but, having
you know,
driven.
And I see these guys every day out on the highway. I mean, I'm working on I-95.
See, now, and but never having it, driven, right? I've never driven. But let me ask you this, a serious question. I remember taking, but I did take a written test, and at one time I had a permit. It's scary enough. But I never really drove, okay? There is a set way of doing this that they explained in the New Jersey driver's manual for if you have a four-way stop, this is how you determine who goes next, right? And I forget how it works now, you know, because it's been,
whoever gets to the intersection first.
Yeah.
And you take your turn. If you're sitting there, two cars pull up, they stop, you go, whichever one of them came up and stopped first goes next. But here, they do these rolling stops, or Texas stops, as they call them around here, where they don't really fully stop, and if nobody's looking, they just shoot through the intersection.
Oh, we can't do
just
that.
Just being complete jerks. And no. Then you got these other guys that just completely blow off all the blinking lights, you know, that are 250 yards before you even get to the first stop sign, and they just blow right on through.
Well, that's just asking for trouble.
But,
there,
you know, working on the interstate, you see that we've got a 60-mile-an-hour work zone. We're adding two lanes to each side of the interstate. So we've had to reduce traffic over. And the lanes are a little narrower than they would normally be, but, you know, we can only do so much with so much room to build in. These people are flying through there, and it's 60-mile-an-hour speed limit, and if they're doing 70, you're lucky. And all it takes is one split second, and you've got a 5 to 7 car chain collision. And it happens all the time. It's just amazing the way people drive. They you know, I would hate to be an insurance company and have to insure the people that I see every day. It would scare the hell out of me.
See, and this is why, you know, people complain about the toll booths in New Jersey, but 95, when you get to the part of 95 that runs through Jersey, it's called the Garden State Turnpike, right? The New Jersey Turnpike. The Garden State is the Parkway, excuse me. Either way, they both run north to south, and they both run the length of the state, all right? The Parkway is just Jersey, and the Turnpike is I-95. That's what I-95 becomes in Jersey. It's weird. Without those regulations, though, without people, you know, it's very weird. It's like the orderly way with which you have to come onto and off of that thing, and the toll booths, which everybody complains about, even though, you know, we got all these different passes now, and, you know, you don't have to stop and throw a quarter in like you used to or whatever, or dollar. I don't even know. I haven't been on a turnpike in so long. But it's like I think it does them a favor, because every other spot on 95 that I've looked at where there's not, like, a bunch of toll booths and there's not, like, a bunch of things slowing you down and a bunch of, like, very specific on and off ramps, there's just massive problems like that, where it's just people are colliding with each other. It doesn't make sense, logically, looking at it, but if you're in that traffic, you can see how it happens. And the weirdest thing is that, and I don't know why this is either, but in some states, they make those lanes so tight, and they put barriers up in different spots on the lane. Sometimes they move the barriers, too, right? It's like, I don't understand how it is that, like, people don't have a nervous breakdown driving on certain parts of 95, especially when you get...
Well, I know some people that won't do it. They can't stand having that Jersey barrier right next to them. It just freaks them out trying to drive. And it, you know, that's what we're under now for construction. We've got Jersey barrier on the inside, and where we've built the road, it's been elevated up. So you've got elevated roadway with Jersey barrier up above you, and then you got Jersey barrier on the other side. And so when something does happen, there's nowhere. Luckily, we've moved a lot of stuff to the outside lanes now. So at least you have a shoulder that something can get off of. But like today, we had a truck somehow messed up a fuel tank, started leaking fuel everywhere. Well, it backed up traffic for nearly 16 miles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a broken down truck. No accident, no wreck. Of course, you get your rubberneckers and your wrecks later on from the backup. But it was just amazing how one little thing like that, for about 3 hours, just traffic was at a standstill.
Right.
And there's really no way to get to them to, you know, there's a contract on the towing on the highway. It takes a while for them to get down there when you've got something as big as a tractor trailer. The other night, working at night, one of the dump trucks hauling asphalt to the job. Guy fell asleep, flipped it. Oof. You know, closed two lanes of traffic southbound for hours.
Right.
You know, with the cleanup. It's just, I don't know, the way people drive is scary.
Right.
Really is.
Phase Shifter in the chat room said they had to walk away from his car last night because of ice and snow. I don't understand how, look, I get it if you're on a hill and you got problems and, you know, I get all that. But what I'm saying is I didn't understand how there was this massive, like, abandoning of cars. I think it was 2014, I think. Just all up and down the highway in Georgia.
Oh, yeah. They showed, it was on the news, you know, the lockdown down there and the fact that ice had hit everything and people just stopped and walked away from the highway. You know, I can't imagine being on the Beltline around Atlanta and having to walk home, you know, or walk to somewhere that you could get a cab or something that would get you even close to home. It's crazy. We had that here one snow. Well, I had a meeting, that I had to go to in Winston-Salem. And when I got to the outskirts of Winston-Salem, I took the first exit because I had to stop and get gas. And I couldn't even get up the exit ramp. The snow was so deep.
Right.
And I was in a four-wheel drive. So I muscled through as best I could, turned right around and drove all the way back home in the snow. Things happened, but there were trucks pulled over to the side, abandoned, or the guys were just sleeping off in the trucks waiting for, you know, someone to come by and clear the roads. With about 3 days, it was hard to get around up around Greensboro, Winston. Right. It was crazy.
Well, listen, man, I am going to actually go ahead and take a break here because I got a little situation, and I'm going to go handle that and come back around. BP is with me. Hopefully you can be with me. 319-527-5016. I actually might have to disable the phone lines for a moment, but I'll be back to them. And we'll be back on the air in just a few minutes here on the live Friday night open mic on Ocelli.com, the Ocelli Effect. And hopefully you'll join us. 319-527-5016. We'll be back after this.
War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never before published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, Nuclear Bombs and Nation Building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War.
By author Mike Swanson.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Damn you. revelation through conversation.
From our relatively recent history, my brother, that's where I'm coming from. I say, oh, wow, beautiful.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com. It looks like I'm not loud enough. There we go. Maybe I am now. What else can go wrong? Anyway, we're back to it. We were talking about driving in general, the recent snow cyclone, the winter cyclone bomb. I don't know what the hell, man. Ice and snow, and how is it out there by you? I know there's a lot of ice and snow throughout the continental U.S. We're certainly experiencing it differently here in the South and all that. But, again, I was very much reminded of a Jersey day when I went outside and got that cold air on me earlier today, and I was just like, wow, man. Not used to this here, and haven't been used to it in several years. But anyways, it is what it is, and we can talk about whatever you want to if you call in. 319-527-5016, just so you know. And you can join us that way, or you can message me, Charles.Ocelli, on Skype, and I will add you into the show. But you got a request to be added to the show, and maybe you got to get on my list, too. So make a contact request, and there you go. Anyways, B-Pete is with me, and we do have one caller, looks like, just got on the line there, so maybe we'll go to him shortly. But where were we, B-Pete? I can't even think straight right now. B-Pete, did I lose you? Uh-oh. What happened now? Did I lose B-Pete? Where did he go? Look at that. I think I lost him. All right. We'll get him back on the call. Hello, click. Everything is a freaking hassle tonight. All right. Oh, let's see. What do we have here? It looks like I should be able to add him back in. Let's try. I don't know what is going on, I'll tell you. And it's not the technological issues that are going to make me want to quit doing this and just say, you know what, 10 years is enough is enough. I'll tell you, it's not the technological issues. It's not the political arguments. It's the banging my head up against a wall, maybe. It isn't even stuff like this where I lost my co-host. Well, you know what? I'll keep trying to get BP back on the line. I don't know why I'm having trouble getting him back on. There we go. Well, I don't know. Maybe he'll add back in a moment. What I'll do is I'll go to my caller then. Let's see if he hasn't hung up. Nope, he's still there. So, looks like I got Jimmy James on the line, man. How you doing?
Doing all right here.
Excellent. Excellent. And you're loud and clear, thank God. Last night we did the impromptu short attention span DJ theater thing. Because both of my guests were sick and Jack Blood canceled, so I figured I'll go live with something. Anyways, that was fun. But what's on your mind tonight?
I don't know. Did anyone in Dallas go check to see if Zapruder's stool is still there? Is Zapruder's stool where he left it in Dealey? Or has someone fooled with his stool?
At last check,
did we get any eyes on this?
Yes, at last check we did get some eyes on it. It was still there as of a couple of weeks ago.
And back.
Wait a minute. Who checked that thing?
Who checked it?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to say who checked it, but somebody that I will inevitably have to meet up with in Dallas if we go, who lives there, checked. Directly.
And he says that thing's fine and dandy, never been fooled with him.
He says looks the same as it did last time he was there.
And what is this we're discussing?
Remember when it came up some weeks ago that the possibility of Zapruder's stool being, you know, the pedestal he was on?
Yeah.
Somebody said that it was either stolen or destroyed or something.
Oh, yeah, because I was skeptical of it.
Well, yeah, I was skeptical of it too. And then I think you Google Earthed it, or somebody Google Earthed it. And then I made contact with somebody that lives in Dallas and asked them, and they were just like, well, you know, I can go down to Dealey Plaza. I'm right here. And look, I said, okay. And they did and told me, and, you know, that, no, it still looks the same as it did. Okay.
I seem to have had a bad internet disconnection. I've lost all internet. I think that's why my phone went dead. I had the internet on my phone. It was using that as a connection for Skype.
Sorry about that. I you were just gone. I was like, I asked you a question, you were gone. I was like, okay. So.
Well, I got a notice on there. It said connection lost. And I looked at my computer screen. I looked down at the icon, and it says connected but no internet. So I don't know. Somewhere between here and Greenville, it's gone screwy.
These kind of things are happening lately. A couple of other updates, though, Jimmy James, because you brought up a bunch of stuff on that one show. About the alterations in Dealey Plaza. I took a look into that. Did I ever get back to you on that and tell you what I found?
No.
Okay. They had had a meeting there in it with the town council regarding this, and apparently they do have some say. Now, I was under the impression that only the Parks Department would have say over this, but the city of Dallas also has a say over part of that entire area, okay? And the crazy proposals that this guy has put forward is like putting in pools in the middle of the road and all these other weird things that he wants to do. And quite frankly, the only thing that I could agree with is that it wouldn't be such a bad idea to seal off that area and cut off traffic through it. I think that would be a smart thing to do, you know, because, I mean, it doesn't happen too often, but I'm waiting for the day that somebody gets themselves killed going out there just trying to take a picture of them their dumbasses standing on an X. And I got to tell you, I mean, some of the people that go rolling through there do not seem to be paying very good attention to where they are or what's going on. So I'm waiting for that to happen. But people run across the street all the time. They don't necessarily use the crosswalk or anything else. I mean, it's a very weird situation. I wouldn't object to them closing it off. I wouldn't object to them preserving it. But all these, like, weird alterations you were talking about, a lot of that stuff is being proposed. And, you know, nothing was binding from the town meeting at last check. And they couldn't, you know, come to a consensus, really, a general consensus on, like, sort of what the city wants. Yet, but the guy who is behind it, the that architect you were talking about, who also is, you know, linked to some sort of media outlet, that guy, yeah, he's pretty insistent. He wants to do all these alterations and this and that, and really change it and blah blah. And I really hate half of what he put in there easily. But I wouldn't object to them shutting it down and actually, you know, redirect the damn traffic. I mean, do you actually need that little leg of road there? Do you actually need that? I don't think so. It might be a minor inconvenience to, you know.
I like it.
What's that?
If I'm playing Frogger out there, are you kidding me? That's part of the challenge.
I don't know. I don't know, man. I'm just saying that if you're going to change something, I wouldn't mind them blocking it off. But, you know, all these other weird things they're talking about, you know, like, oh, well, how is it that, you know, how do you think the Kennedy family feels having people just roll their bread trucks over this area? And it's like, you know what? That's already been going on for half a century. What are you going to do now? This isn't 1964. You know, if somebody talked about really, you know, preserving it exactly as it was, that would be one thing. But the whole plaza has already gone through a facelift. They had to replace several of the boards on the picket fence. They had to, they you know, resurfaced parts of things and all kinds of stuff already. So, I mean, it's done. But if they wanted to preserve it so that people could, you know, get a general sense of the historical site and all that, I don't think that would be a bad idea. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't like the monkeying around. They already had some bungholio messing around. They got Madison, the guy who wrote the Constitution. They disgraced his house, bebopping and scatting all over the place over there. They've turned it to a shrine of slavery.
Well, maybe
and
I'm
idiocy.
I got you. Maybe I'm not making
and almost nothing to do.
Yeah, but maybe I'm not making this clear to you, Jimmy James. What I'm saying is, I don't approve of the idea of them screwing around with it anymore. But I, if they blocked it off, I think that would be okay if they blocked it off. You're saying, yeah, screw it, let people just play Frogger. But I don't know. I think if you were to do something, blocking it off would be the thing to do. Other than that, I don't agree with changing all this other stuff and adding these pools and this and that.
You give them an inch, they'll take a foot.
I don't know. But, you know, but the thing is, this guy's going to keep trying with this crazy proposal. And you were right to say that it was an insane kind of proposal where they're going to put pools in the middle of the street. And we're going to put a reflecting pool, you know, where the X is. Which, by the way, is the X in the right place anyway to begin with? You know, look, there's a whole bunch of problems here. But I wouldn't object to them just sort of, you know, saying, look, no more traffic on this. If you want to come visit it, you visit it. You know, but you can't drive through it anymore. And the counter argument there is, the experience of driving through. You're not going to be able to simulate the experience. I mean, I know they did that one thing for a while with, you know, hey, we'll put you in a limo and you can drive down the same route that JFK went down. They did that for a while and it was stupid. Really idiotic. And
I got a question for you. This came about a story I read a couple of days ago, and the headline was something like, document dump reveals that CIA had a closer connection with Oswald. And apparently in this story, they say that based on memos and stuff, Oswald was involved with the CIA in another operation gathering intelligence just a few weeks before the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elucidate on that at all?
Yeah, a little bit, but you already know this story. Is the sad part? It's not really new.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's not very new. This is some BS here, and this is really an obfuscative move by the CIA, who you know pre-briefed all of these corporate media people. All right, that's what they were doing in the lead up to this drop. You know, this December 15th deadline that Biden set. And again, I'm even willing to believe that the White House has no idea what the hell would be of value in these files and not. Okay, so what they signed off on might have been in good faith that they thought, you know, okay, well, you guys are going to release all this stuff, right? Okay, but not entirely. That's why they need to be sued, and that's why the Trump administration needed to be sued as well. But nobody did it anyway. This is just about the Fair Play for Cuba Committee thing, really, and the fact that a bunch of people, not just, you know, J. Walton Moore, you know, contacting DeMore and Shield and all that, but we now have evidence that there was a meeting held, and there's a memorandum of a meeting held between, and this is the thing about why these reporters don't understand what they're looking at. There was a meeting held between a bunch of, let's just call them, middle managers with the CIA, but not, you know, nobodies, like people whose names, you know, are very significant at the time, in counterintelligence and domestic operations, all right? And they were all instructed to get together and sort out what's going on with Oswald in that summer. So all that does really is show you that the claim that the CIA had no knowledge of him is BS. But we already knew that.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, we already knew that. I knew that a long time ago.
Yeah, that's all. That's the only confirmation that they have. Is there was a meeting between, you know, not necessarily, you know, McCone and these guys, right? Not your upper echelon, not guys, because that's not who would have this meeting anyway. It would be people that would have to be familiar with these types of assets and also familiar with the Cuba project. And well, the suggestion is it's not entirely proved out in the documents still, because a lot of things are still redacted. Thank you. But it links to that whole thing where the CIA was running a campaign against the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, where a lot of people like Diogenio and stuff said that they were trying to destroy it. He's like half right, because they weren't really trying to destroy it. It looks to me more like they were trying to utilize it, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, the legitimate organization.
Yeah.
And they were trying to infiltrate it and use it, and Oswald was being met. You know, there was a meeting about Oswald at exactly that time when that operation's going on. Now, ultimately, it destroyed the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, the whole Oswald incident and his connection to the, you know, the BS chapter that he started, you know, which is exactly how you would run this kind of operation, where it's like, okay, we don't need to put a guy in the organization. We'll just put a guy out there who's pretending to be part of the organization, right? And that way you can, you know, cause things to happen in public and change opinion or get attention on or whatever your purpose is for the FPCC, right? So that's what they were doing. And Oswald is being, you know, there's a meeting held about him. Not that that was the only thing happening in that meeting, but that specifically that needed to be covered, and that was a directive from above. This we know now. But it's really only a minor increase in the amount of information we already had that effectively could have made this conclusion anyway. It's not some, oh my God, brand new information. that's what it is essentially. And I mean, look, there may be more in there, which is why I'm not pointing to the specific document yet, but the one memo does seem to indicate that, and I'm not done. I mean, this is not easy to go through. I don't think anybody's done. So, anyway, maybe somebody is. Maybe somebody is, you know, I don't know. Morley thinks he's much more brilliant than I think he is. But, you know, maybe he's gone through it all. I know Larry didn't make it all the way through, and I didn't. But who knows? Maybe somebody did. I still don't have answers about some of the NSA stuff that's in there. But anyhow, working on it, guys. I'm not going to tell you stuff until I know it for sure. You know what I mean? Other people can make speculations about things, but quite frankly, so far I got a whole lot of nothing out of most of this. Very, very little minor things, and in some cases, actually, apparently there were changes in redactions, because I got stuff that's more redacted now than the copy that I know I had in '96. So, you know. I don't know what to say about it, except it's just, it appears to me to be a giant time waster that they've dropped on us to try and shut us up and to make the claim in the media that they've given 97% of it. And now, now these people are just going to complain about the final 3%, which, as I laid out with Larry, is a fallacy. And if anybody was, you know, anybody took notes or heard the press conference that I did stream on here, Rex Bradford answered the question about this, then they know that there's a logical fallacy in trying to ascribe a particular percentage to the amount of documents that could be revealed. We've already given you 97% of what you could get. It's just impossible to say that. And in fact, appears to be a complete complete lie, because there's no way of knowing what 100% is. So how do you know what 97% is? If you can't qualify 100%, if you can't quantify 100%, then you cannot quantify 97%. I mean, unless I'm doing my math wrong. I mean, you know, you guys could tell me that, but I don't think so. You know, if you give me $50, BP, and I said, well, you just gave me half of all your money. Now, if I know for certain you only have $100, that might be true. But if I have no idea what amount of money you actually have, I don't know what percentage of your money you just gave me. Do I?
Well, and that's the problem with people that have the totals and ones telling us the figures, and they've been known to lie about things in the past. It's, you know, anything that comes out of the government now is so tainted that nobody trusts the government anymore, I don't believe, in any aspect, especially when it comes to CIA and any kind of damn three-letter organization connected to the government, as far as I'm
concerned. The polls show that the young people do believe the government more and more, BP. Why? Because they're big daddy sugar tits.
Yeah,
think... specify. You talk about the Republicans or the Democrats, because they're all the same now. You just look at this last bill that got passed. I've never seen something so scandalous in all my life. This is ridiculous. 4,000-page document gets voted in. Nobody knows what the hell's in it. And we've got, what, 1.1 or 1.7 trillion more on top of all this? I'd say there's no difference between any party nowadays. Anybody that thinks there is out of their freaking mind.
Do you honestly think that young people are influenced by Joe Biden at this point? Because, I don't know. The young people...
I honestly think some of them are, seriously.
Really?
Chuck, I think that's... Yes, I think we need to address the fact that young people today, they have no education. They have no history to base anything on. And yet we're allowing these idiots to vote, and they don't have a damn clue if it doesn't come across TikTok or Facebook. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. We've seen now the FBI was out there paying Twitter and other platforms to suppress stuff. I'm at the point right now, I don't trust a damn thing from the government. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yep, fair enough. I mean, you know, I'm with you, and I agree with you, except I got to tell you that I don't see Joe Biden having that grand influence individually. I think they're just taking any lead from authority at this point. Because the same...
Everybody.
Well, it's not him so much. It's the whole culture's moving forward. They want to be taken care of. They want socialism.
Yeah.
And Biden's listening to this, to his weirdo cabinet. And that's what they're working for.
No, wait a minute. You look at these 18 senators that crossed the line and signed this damn thing and then handed it off on the House and went home. So there was no debate on it. A 4,000-page document dumped at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're voting on it the next day, and they pass it. It's not just Biden. It's the Republicans. It's Mitch McConnell. It's what's his name from South Carolina. It's all of them. Keep reelecting these people, and that's the way they want this thing run. That's the way the people in power want this system to work.
Right. Well,
4,000 pages of bull crap that's got voted on, and nobody has a clue as to what's in that 4,000 pages. And we're going to find out. I mean, these guys can print money when they want, but they're still raping me for 37% of what I make every damn day. This is ridiculous. This is really getting ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. Unfortunately, you're breaking up a bit. So, I don't know. Maybe mute. Take a minute and let your compression build up on your internet or something. I've got Nature Boy who just joined us via Skype, and, I got to tell you, I do find it remarkable that, you know, depending on who you are, you don't even question. It's amazing. Oh, they passed this omnibus thing, and I'm like, 4,000 pages. Can you read 4,000 pages on an overnight? Because I can't. I mean, and I try like hell to read, and this stuff is not exactly fun reading, you know. You know, I remember that thing in the Michael Moore film. It was, you know, I'm not a big fan of Michael Moore's crap usually, but sometimes he gets a good piece of tape, and I love that congressman who goes, you know, sit down, my son. Nobody reads any of the bills. I love that part because it was like, you know, the truth. Anyway, Nature Boy, can you hear me, brother?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can. Good. See, now, BP's got a little internet issue, so I really wish that rant was a lot clearer that he just had. But what's on your mind tonight? How you doing?
I agree with him. I think that this younger generation doesn't know their history, has never been taught to critically analyze anything, has no idea of literature, and as a result, they've been propagandized. I mean, it's the manifestation of the trophy, participation trophy generation, and they're so used to getting what they want so easily. When anything conflicts to their post-truth little view of the world, they don't know how to handle it.
See, I understand that. I understand that, but I need to interrupt you here on this because I get where you're going, but here's something that I want to reveal to you about recent polling. Because, you know, one of the guys who was working with the Mary Farrell Foundation did a poll on the JFK stuff. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Over the generations, and I've watched this since the 80s, but certainly I went back and I read the stuff in the 70s and the later 60s regarding the work and exactly how it affected public opinion. Okay? And one of these guys who does this, he's a polling guy, and he does, you know, a statistical analysis of responses and stuff like that for a living.
So what was the survey or the
well, in general,
statistics?
In general, here's the trend that has changed, okay? And this is why I'm going to make this argument, and I'm going to throw it to you after that.
Please.
The trend that changed is that over the years, since Mark Lane released his book, his movie, and quite frankly, a bunch of people like Weisberg and all that in the early days had done some good work, and the opinions started to shift away from the official story regarding Kennedy's assassination and the documentaries and all that that went on. We have incrementally seen that over the decades, it has gone in the direction of, we ain't buying this, okay? And it has gone.
Yeah.
Well, here's a weird shift in the trend. They broke it down by age, right? And they always did, but they never used to tell you this. So if you read, you know, the different polls before and you read all their data, you could find, okay, they figured out what, you know, people from 18 to 25 thought. And the next, you know, demographic, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in a long time, big decrease in the people that think the government is hiding anything. Guess who? The young people. And you know why? Because my argument is this. It's not about, oh, they want socialism, they love Biden, oh, they love Trump. Because I'm telling you right now, if you saw young people where I live, at least young white people anyway, they were certainly all in on Trump. And all about, didn't matter, and I mean, more about, I don't know anything about politics, but I know I'm with this guy. Here's the thing.
Okay, you're losing me.
The reason
Let's get
why,
back to that original point.
Back to, I am on the original point. See, nobody wants to hear it. I know. It's okay. Let me tell you. These young people are appealing to authority.
Yes,
that's what it is.
Much.
It's got nothing to do with the shift of, like, they want this or that. They're going to go with whoever's in that office now. They're accepting from the government. Now, it may be part of what you're talking about as far as, you know, or what Jimmy James is saying about, you know, wanting to be taken care of. Maybe that's what it is. But they're definitely like, whoever Big Daddy is, we're rolling with them.
Well, I think there's multiple spokes to the wheel of control. And you know, dependence, of course, is one of them. But another is because these children, right, who are young now adults, never had the ability to be educated properly. They are buying into the propaganda. And as a result, they're appealing to authority because that's what they've been programmed to do. And it's just a manifestation of that. And I see this not only with them, but I see this with friends of mine. Now, typically, you know, because I, before COVID hit and I became persona non grata because I wouldn't take the, you know what, right? You know, I had majority of my friends were arts people, which were highly democratic. So much that if I was going to bring Trump up, because I am neither right nor left, right? I'd bag a little bit of, you know what, on Trump, and they'd be like, oh, that's great, blah, 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 but that's about it. They've now appealed to authority, and the thing about it is these are people that are in their 60s. These are the hippies, man. The original left that fought for freedom, that fought for, let me live my life the way I want to, you know, freedom of speech, right, and always susceptible to the government and big corporations. Now, they're just like the kids. They appeal to authority, and anything that comes from the government or through the major media, they don't even question, man. Yep. And they're, some of them, it's like they're entrenched. You cannot, I can't, I'm not even going to bring the subject up because I know there's no way with no matter how many facts I can give them, are they ever going to see truth or reality? They're just going to be stuck in that programmed blank stare stage, if you know what I mean.
Now, I know. And part of this, you know, again, the paradigm being warped as it is means that, you know, they're not even attached to an actual ethos anymore.
No.
You know, the idea that there was, you know, this, well, they're liberal. I even hate the use of the word because an actual liberal.
Insult to the word liberal, by the way, because I'm a liberal.
See, I probably would be. If there was a legitimate group of people that were liberals, I'd probably be with them. But there is none. It's gone. And I'll tell you something else. These people that used to be conservatives that would talk about, you know, character is the issue. you know, your work ethic is the issue. We, you know, of course, and I used to argue about, you know, why would you care about somebody's personal life if they're doing a job and they do the job right and this kind of thing? And I was on that side of it, right? Mm-hmm. And these guys, I mean, a friend of mine who actually engaged with me on Twitter recently, I guess he joined Twitter again, you know, who was a friend of mine in high school, mm-hmm. you know, I could definitely address this, but he's in total shock that I'm not quite as conservative as I was in high school, pretty much, right?
Listen, obviously, he doesn't know the game.
Well, life lessons have gone, you know, him and I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh together, right? Mm-hmm. This was one of my buddies, okay? And you know, this is where we were at. That's what was available. I mean, late at night, I was listening to Bill Cooper on the shortwave, but he wasn't around for that. Mm-hmm. You know, but him and I would listen to Rush Limbaugh. We thought it was hilarious. We thought, you know, we were on that side of the equation, pretty much. Mm-hmm. You know, but he's, like, horrified that, like, I'm so liberal now. And it's too funny because he brought up this thing on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it, but he goes...
Well, now, wait a minute. You've got to take into consideration that Rush Limbaugh outlived the conservative aspect of the Republican Party.
Yes, he did.
And that was the problem. Towards his last few years, he's even having to sit there and stare in disbelief at some of the stuff the Republicans are doing as part of their platform and part of the things that they're legislating. And, you know, Rush was an ultra-conservative long after conservatism left the Republicans.
You know, we've just riled up Jimmy James, right? You know, we've just riled up Jimmy James, so we're going to have to give him space to comment on this.
Well, I don't care rile him up or not. Okay. I mean, you got to face facts. There ain't much conservatism left in the Republican Party. You can evidence that just over the past 3 days.
I agree with you. Again, your point is so well taken. About 4,000 pages. Nobody even knows what the hell's in it, and they just signed off on it. But, Jimmy James, I want to give you the space to respond to all of what you just heard, because I know you're like, what the hell? Go ahead.
Conservatism versus republicanism. I don't want to deal with that right now. Actually, I was going to ask for a 5-minute block so I could play a 3-minute clip and comment at it at your convenience at some point, if possible.
Okay, I don't know how it'll sound playing through your phone a 3-minute clip. I mean, do you want to pass it to me and I'll play it?
Yeah, I got the right times. I'll just email it to you and then.
Okay, I'll pick it up and I'll download it and we'll play it here and we'll comment on it. No problem. So I'll get that. But
it's not even so much. First, I have to comment it because I just want to clarify something.
Oh, sure.
Important.
Sure. Important. Okay, but does it have anything to do with this whole thing we were just talking about or no?
Absolutely nothing really to do with politics at all.
Okay.
So if you guys just please carry on with that argument, and in the meantime, I'll email you the thing.
All right, cool. Yeah, you email that. I'll tell you the quick story that the guy brought up on Twitter, which was kind of funny. It's like his favorite story that he always brings up whenever he encounters me again online, which happens every couple of years. And we were sitting in a class, and this very, very, like, back then in the, you know, late 80s kind of liberal-type girl, white girl in my school there, was talking all this crap about how wonderful it is in Europe and how wonderful this and that is and the third thing is and how, you know, the United States is so terrible because we don't do things as well as they do them over there and this and that. And then the teacher was engaged in the conversation and agreeing with her and left and right. And I'm sitting there just shaking my head. And I'm thinking about, you know, this person and the way they're doing their things. And I spoke up and said it kind of rudely. So I'll edit it actually, I won't edit it. Screw it. We're not going to FM. I don't know. I blurted out just because I had to. Lady, you ever try and take a shit in Sicily? Seriously. Cause you have no idea what you're talking about with the comforts and the greatness and the this and that throughout Europe. You know nothing. You haven't been there, have you? I have. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. If I might interject, I lived in Germany for a long time, and when I was younger. And it's the same thing. The luxuries we have over here and the conveniences didn't exist over there. There was no such thing when I lived there as a 24-hour convenience store. No. None. And
You had quiet time. You had times where businesses were closed two hours in the middle of the day. Sunday, you know, forget a blue law over here. There was no law over there. You couldn't buy a damn thing.
No, when we wanted to go out, if it was Sunday, if we didn't have any beer already stashed out, right, we'd actually have to go out to the guest houses and stuff like that, you know, if we wanted to drink. And it's a whole different concept. We as Americans who have never lived outside of the United States are like spoiled brats that don't realize how dang good we have it here. You know, it's like, yeah, go hang out in Mexico and just – and get away from the turista area and go to just a middle-class neighborhood, right? Your whole perspective of what we have here, I guarantee it will change.
Yeah. And I know things have changed a bit over the years. You know, a lot of the American conveniences have been bled into, you know, a lot of different places in Europe. But at that time in the 80s, okay, the late 80s,
and that's when I was there.
Yeah. I mean, there were decidedly differences like you guys are talking about. And again, even if you were in the military, you had options that, like, a civilian over there would not have had. So, I mean, you know, on base, you had stuff going on your base that wasn't necessarily governed by whatever the hell was going on, you know, in the nearby towns. If you're just an American over there, you're going to suffer some culture shock at that time because stuff does not work the same way, you know.
Not only that, I was stationed in Mainz, a pretty good sized city in Germany.
I know it. My friend was stationed in Mainz.
And then I went, this was back in the early 80s, and then later, the 90s, well, early to mid 90s, when I got married, we went over to Europe for honeymoon, and we went to Mainz. We stayed in Frankfurt. It was amazing. In the time, in those years between early 80s and mid 90s, they had pulled out the American presence in that area. The only thing left was the big hospital over in Wiesbaden. And it was different to walk around. We went back to the old barracks, which part of it had been converted into apartments and things like that in the old neighborhood. And it was amazing to see the difference. But the biggest change was the way they treated Americans. Over that time, you know, before you could go around as a private in the army and live like a king, you know, everything catered to the military being there because it was such a big force. I mean, everybody employed on the base was civilian. I mean, that was part of the deal for all these different concerns. And you had a military base or installation every, you know, 10 kilometers in some areas, these little concerns and things like that. So there was a big presence over there. But going back after about 10, 12 years with all that gone, I mean, you'd actually, you know, have people that were hostile to the Americans because of the fact that they pulled out and took their jobs with them and things like that. It was weird. But yeah, convenience wise, there's things that you take for granted over here every day of the week that, depending on what part of Europe you're in, you may not experience, you may not see them. And it, you know, until people go somewhere else other than their, you know, 50 miles from where they were born, they're not going to realize that the world is totally different. The poorest people in the United States are still considered in the top 1% of wealthy people in the world. Think about that.
We are. I know that's a statistic I've told a lot of people, especially a lot of left wing, the 1%. I was like, dude, do you realize that the poorest person in the country, if you're born here, you're in the 1% of the global population. And that's always a brain. You always get that, you know, glazed over look because they really don't know how to respond to it. But we are, we're privileged to live here. And that's what kind of irks me is when you get these spoiled brats that are like, yeah, this place sucks. And yeah, we got tons of problems, right? But,
well, it's not only that.
See, I don't mind that this place sucks.
But those young people are being led by people who have, you know, these politicians that we send to Washington are doing nothing but gaming the system. They know how to game the system. They know how to gain their money out of it and go home a hell of a lot richer than when they first showed up. And people today, the majority of the population, they just, they have no clue as to how bad they're being screwed. $1.7 trillion we're getting ready to spend in the next year. That's through September of next year, folks. Yeah. That's not for 10 years down the road. $1.7 trillion.
It just popped into my mind when the first crash came in 08. I forgot who it was, but she was something, someone in the Federal Reserve or something, something like that, right? And it's the big bailout. It was, what, $750 billion.
Yeah.
And people lost their collective minds about, and now that's just thrown around here. Oh, hey, hey, Zelensky, here's $750 billion, you know, or whatever. You know,
it's like just, it doesn't matter anymore. Talking, yeah, no, like, I remember that.
Trillions.
See, now, I don't know. These young people don't have that memory of, I was pissed that I could not believe that the banks were being bailed out to that amount of money.
Wait a minute, though. Think about this. You look at the way inflation is right now. We're getting ready to throw another $1.7 trillion on top of all the money that has been pumped for the last 2 years since COVID took over. Mm. All this money hitting the economy. And what is the Fed is bumping up the interest rate several times a year. So this debt that we now have, the interest that we're paying on it goes up every 3 months when the Fed jacks their rate. And people don't understand what this $1.7 trillion is going to cost us in the long run.
It's only going to increase inflation. It's going to weaken the dollar. And the most hideous tax, and this is according to he wrote Creature from Jekyll Island. It's inflation and what it's going to go. Inflation equals a less buying power on the dollar. And the more you borrow, especially at these amounts, is going to weaken the dollar even more, i.e. going to eventually increase inflation. But they say it's to fight inflation. That's why every time the government comes out with a bill or says something, pretty much I look at the opposite of what they're saying, because that's probably closer to the truth than what they're trying to tell us.
If you took $1 trillion, just $1 trillion, and you treated each dollar as a second, mm-hmm. and you divided that by 60, that would give you minutes. And you mm-hmm. divided that by 60 would give you hours. $1 trillion is 277,777,777.77. I mean, you think about that in the way of money. You know, mm-hmm. let's divide that. Well, hell, let's take it one step further. Just divide it by days. That's 11 million days.
Divide it by years.
Filtration, you know, to discredit.
31,000 years. 31,709 years is $1 trillion.
Yep. You're talking pre-Sumerian days.
31,000 years.
And they're throwing those things, that amount around like it's nothing, like a drunken
sailor. Right, and they can print this stuff. They print this stuff when they need it, but yet they're still screwing me out of 37% out of my check every week. Why? Mm-hmm.
Hey, not to mention the cost of energy. Oh, my God. I just got my latest bill, and I don't live in a big place, right? And granted, it's new, right? It was almost $300 freaking dollars. I about crapped a pickle, if you know what I mean. And I'm like, oh, my, you know, I haven't figured out the cost per therm, but me suspects PG&E, thank you, Pacific Gas and Electrics, brought to you by Let's Burn Down Half the Sierra Nevada Forest and all the towns in it. Yeah, it's crazy. And we got it good. If you listen to the stories in Europe, you know, the people in England, what it's costing them to heat their house, a lot of them, from the stories that I heard, and I will put that in the grain of salt bucket, there's people that aren't going to be able to heat their houses, and they're at 32 degrees or 0 degrees Celsius type weather. My God. What's going on these days? I don't know.
It's all part of the big game.
I think so. I think it's all part of the Klaus Schwab agenda, the world government, that the agenda and the plans have been in existence for a long time. probably longer than we know, and now we're finally starting to see the real-time manifestations. And it's what concerns me, not fears me, is what's going to happen down the road in the short term and especially the long term. What about these what's it like for the kids growing up when they become adults? You know,
I don't know. I'm glad I didn't have to go through the horror of raising kids in today's society. I don't know what I'd do. I really don't. I mean, I know I wouldn't be able to put them in public school because I'd probably be put in jail over that. But other than that, I don't. It's a tough job out there for people to have to raise kids today. The way we treat children, we will sexualize them to the point of a sickness, but yet we won't let them work at 13. You know, we won't let them go out there and earn an honest dollar. But you can TikTok or OnlyFans, you know, and make a fortune. It's just amazing. We have quit valuing children. It all started with the non-returnable bottle, as I've always said. Once we went there, everything went down the tubes after that. It's a shame. It's a shame that we have a country that is capable of the things we are capable of. Mm-hmm. And we're wasting our youth on petty politics, identity politics, and the cult of personality. That's what we've reduced ourselves to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm sure Jimmy James has something to say about that. Don't you, Mr. Jimmy James? Are you still getting that clip together, my friend?
I sent the information to Chuck. Is it ready to roll?
Probably download it. I would think.
Yeah.
He sounds busy.
He does.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is.
He does sound busy.
Sure he is.
But, you know, getting back to today, until after I saw what went in the way of votes, especially when we have a new Congress, a new House coming in January, and I saw what they pulled this last week over this stuff, until we get rid of Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Lindsey Graham and the rest of them that have been there so damn long that it's going to be impossible to get every trace of
it. It's kind of a shame that their boot boot probably was sailing, man. Because if it was the real deal, man, you know, you might have gotten your wish. Mother Nature might have come down and taken care of that whole problem.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how we're going to get rid of it. You know, you talk about voting these people. How the state of Kentucky keeps electing Mitch McConnell, I don't get.
Well, just look at just the gerrymanderings of a jurisdiction map. The first time I saw one, it blew me away. I always thought.
Well, no, I mean, besides that, the courts have gotten involved on the gerrymandering issue, which I thought was quite funny this past election cycle when in New York they told the Democrats, no, you can't do that. I thought that was, you know, royal. But we have a problem here in North Carolina. Years ago, they passed a referendum on the ballot about voter ID, and it passed. And the legislature came up with the law. And this Democratic-led state Supreme Court keeps throwing it out. Now, how is it that 30-some-odd states in the United States have a voter ID law, and yet ours is consistently found to be unconstitutional? They just passed a bill as part of the Constitution to require ID for voting. Good. Now, how can it be against the Constitution? That's how ridiculous it has gotten at the court level in this state. Luckily, that's going to change here shortly, but we're going to have to wait for another lawsuit to come up. It got so bad that every census, when by state, you know, Constitution, and by federal constitution, we recount and we reallocate and we draw new maps. It happens every 10 years by law. It's supposed to be done. Before they even meet to draw the maps, somebody has filed a court case against them. They can't even get them done before it's in court by four or five different organizations to where you're litigating something all the time. North Carolina has consecutively had things come out 3 years after the fact because the court cases that get mounted and things get decided
And on a couple of them, it's been, well, we've come up with a decision, but it doesn't really matter because the law's changed three times since then. It's crazy.
I thought California politics was crazy. But North in actuality, Carolina, well, if you were to compare yours to California, yeah, you would be like MAGA country compared to this crazy. You know, well, I don't know MAGA country, but y'all would look pretty sane compared to this crazy legislature. And
well, I understand that. State. I mean, you know, I've lived in California for a while. My dad was stationed in the Navy out there. We were in San Diego in National City. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've been out there quite a bit traveling and all. I couldn't live in California. Beautiful place. Probably the most diverse state of the 50 that we have. But
geologically, we have almost every environment that exists in the world in this state except for like tropical rainforests.
You see,
so
yeah, no,
and you could be within 2 hours to the forest.
It's got great diversity, but I got to tell you something, man. I love cities. I really do love cities. I'm one of those guys. Love New York. I love, you know, Atlanta's fun. Every city I go to, I love them. I'll tell you something, though. I tried to live in L.A. Nope. I can't do it. I cannot handle the psychosis that is Los Angeles.
Yes. It is impossible. I used to do a lot of work down in L.A. in the 90s. I traveled for a living, and that's predominantly where the work was. We did a big job at Universal Studios for about 6 months.
Oh, I loved Universal Studios. I visited that when I was there. I went to go see, you know what they had there for a little bit was the,
what was that one?
The All in the Family set was there for a while at Universal. Okay. Not the theme park like people would think of today, but it was just like the Universal Studios place, right? You're talking about like the production. Yeah, yeah. That was great. That's wonderful. But the people there are insane.
They're nuts.
We would have to use tents sometimes, you know. And we worked in the bowels of Universal Studios. There was no glamour, right? And, you know, we were basically worked in their inventory warehouses. And we'd get these tents on big days, and they'd come in. And as soon as they came back, the backstage area, lack of a better term, they had stars in their eyes. And every one of them is a producer. I'm a script writer. I'm the next Steven Spielberg and stuff like that. And in my mind, I'd look at them, and I'm like, okay, darling, you're going to be waiting tables the rest of your life. Honey, child, well, you might be able to do a little porn. Dude, you're going to be waiting tables, or you might get a porn gig here or there, but that's about it. And honestly, I'd look at him and says, I don't care. Here's a bin of bolts. Start counting them.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, the what? No. You're not here. You're not going to make a contact. You're here to do a job. Get your minimum wage done and count this box of bolts. It was crazy. And those are just the people that were there. And that's a small example. But, you know, spending so much time there, you're hanging out and you meet people that are living around there. And, man, they are just some weird.
See, the only good
weird
thing.
Weird people.
Yeah. The only good thing about L.A. and the weird people, to be honest with you, I'm thinking about it because it was like being on another planet. I couldn't stand it. Other people around the country would be like, you lived in New York. That place is crazy. I'm like, no, New York makes perfect sense. Okay. Los Angeles, no. The only good thing about Los Angeles is this. If you are willing to hustle and do ridiculous things, you can make a living. That's the only thing that's true.
Well, it's a difference. But New York City is, I don't care what you say, you've got Manhattan, you've got, you know, the Upper East Side. New York is blue collar. I don't care what you say. That's what built that city. That's what keeps that city going. That's your average New Yorker is just a blue-collar guy trying to make it through the week.
The core of it.
L.A. is totally different.
Right.
L.A. is ego. It doesn't matter what you do, where you go, or how you are. It's your ego that gets you through the day.
Like whoever
two totally different worlds.
Like think about this. You would not see this in New York City, but you see it in L.A. You know where they have that, like, Walk of Fame with the stars? Right? You know, little stars on the sidewalk. Well, yeah, you got the Chinese theater over there. Are you allowed to say Chinese theater anymore? Is that politically incorrect? Whatever. Anyways.
It's the name of it.
It is the name of it, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
Grauman's Chinese Theater.
That's right. Anyway, but that's what it is. Okay, anyhow, whoever first came up with this idea of, you know what, it doesn't matter that I'm like 30 pounds overweight and I have like a set of underoos. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be Fat Spider-Man. Okay, and I'm going to charge people to take pictures with me. Mm-hmm. Somebody came up with that. And these guys make bank doing stuff like that. I mean, more money than you're going to get working at the In-N-Out Burger. taking pictures, and these guys look terrible. And they're just like, it's just like, take a picture with a freak. Hey, hello. Somebody came up with that idea out in L.A.
At least in New York, right?
Yeah.
The cowboy in his underwear, right? At least he wasn't fat. He had Times Square, guy.
Well, right? A, he wasn't fat, and B, famous people mixing into New York City, nobody bothers them. The neighborhood I lived in, right, I would routinely run into Lou Reed, and nobody bothered him. Everybody knew who he was, and nobody bothered him. New York does that. Los Angeles?
Probably.
Oh, no.
Oh, can I take a selfie with you? Hey, can I get your autograph? Hey, you know, I got this script, man. You know, I just got my band just released this new demo tape. You want to listen to it type of a thing? That's what you're talking about?
Well, and L.A. is a lot of that cult of personality. I mean, that's what that whole town revolves on. I mean, you know, you connect it with Hollywood, with the music industry. It's just all ego. You know, you're afraid somebody's going to pop somebody's balloon one day and the whole town deflate. It's amazing.
I mean,
it's a whole world unto itself.
So, and I'll tell you another weird one. I'll tell you another weird one I ran into living in New York, and you guys, you're going to find this unbelievable because I hate Eric Clapton, right? But I run into him. And how do I run into him? He's got an apartment in the same neighborhood that I lived in. Much better part of the neighborhood than I lived in. But either way, it was, you know, the nice part of the spot in the Lower East Side where I was, right? And they had these Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous meetings for musicians, specifically for musicians, because you're in a different business world when you're in music, you know, and so therefore your pressure is trying to work your 12 steps. It ain't the same thing as somebody working at Denny's trying to get through the day not drinking, okay? It's just not. So musicians have unique problems, and they would have me, Eric Clapton, sitting across from me at an AA meeting in New York. You know what I mean? And nobody's bugging him. Nobody's bugging him. Nobody's asking for autographs. None of that. And I don't even like the guy. But I'm just saying, I just found it interesting. It was sort of like, nobody's going to bother him, huh? Okay. That's the sum of the difference. Of the people you're dealing with is that they don't even care. You're a celebrity. So what? You know what you are? You're the guy that lives on that block. You know what? Get through the line at the bodega and don't slow up my day, jackass. I don't care who you are. That's it. I love that. Los Angeles? No. Everything is just, you know, impression and image and who it is and, like I said, the only difference there is that it's a much more wide open thing for the hustler mentality, whether it's drugs or it's BS like, you know, Fat Spider-Man or whatever. It doesn't matter. The prostitution scene doesn't even work like it does throughout the rest of the country. Everything, even the criminal stuff, is totally different in Los Angeles. I cannot function there. It's like a different planet. It is completely foreign. I cannot stand Los Angeles. And I say that knowing I have a couple of listeners in Los Angeles. Dude, you're on another planet. I don't care. Just like Florida is an open-air insane asylum, Los Angeles is a piece of another planet that fell on this earth. That's it. It's not normal. It's not even remotely normal.
I have to interject and say that there are some cool little places. I call them little islands in L.A.
Okay. I believe
that
you.
I found.
I believe you. I didn't see them, but I believe
surrounded by, like, absolute... lunacy. Besides that, love San Diego, hate LA. Sorry, LA listeners. I like y'all, but don't really like the area.
I've loved some of the people I've met that were from LA, you know, when I wasn't in LA. But when I was in LA, it was just a nightmare. I freaking hated it. I could not stand it. I was so happy to leave a couple of months later and not really live there for very long.
That's why I live in Northern California. And, you know, it's a little different up here to all y'all around the world. California ain't L.A. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of different places. And I live right at the crest of the Sierra Nevada mountains. And it's a little bit of town, a little bit of country. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool here. Wish I lived in a better neighborhood. Just got my mail ripped off this week, but this is just junk mail. So I don't have to worry about it. But other than that,
That is That is a weird thing going on in a lot of places. I don't know if you heard on Aaron's show last week or the week before or whatever, we were talking about that. And, of course, he's in California, and he's gotten his mail ripped off in two spots now. I don't get it. But then again, you know what? I had a piece of mail disappear recently coming to Georgia. I think mail theft is might be a rising thing. I hadn't been hearing about it, but I don't know.
I think I need to lock down my credit with Experian again just to make sure.
Maybe. Okay, so look, I got this clip that Jimmy James wanted played. So I did promise him I would get it. He emailed it to me, so I try to be a man of my word. And I did step away from the mic. I wasn't here for a little bit. That's why you didn't hear me. For a little bit. I had to handle something. I think I'm done handling everything here. Tell you, man.
Handle it.
I'm trying. But I got this clip that Jimmy James wanted played, so let's see. He says to start at 107, looks like. And let's see. End time?
No, that don't sound right. Wait a minute.
Your thing says start at 107.53. That's what it says. You check your email. Because that's what you said. You got different directions. I'll play it in a different spot.
Hold on. Let's see.
Anyway, while he's finding his times, so I'm going to play this. I have no idea what this clip is, what it's from, nothing.
Here's my phone. Yeah, you're right. 107.53. Yep.
Okay, but according to what you said there, I'm only playing it to 110. So it's only 3 seconds?
1:10:20.
Okay, 1 hour, minute, 10 minutes. Gotcha.
10 minutes of 53 seconds. Yeah, okay.
Okay, now I understand. Sorry about that. But I was right about that 107 time start. Okay. All right, no problems.
But I also wanted to explain it before you played it.
Sure. Okay, I've got it set at 107.29, so that's where we'll start it from. And go ahead, Jimmy James, you set it up, and I'll play it.
Okay, there seems to be a misconception out there that Professor Mellon, quote-unquote, said that Lee Harvey Oswald was outside the building. Now, she did not say that. Rabbi Beckham did when she interviewed him. Mm-hmm. That's all she did is print what the man said, and she talks about it, and we'll listen to a little bit. Now, the person that put together the description that Beckham gives and linked it to the so-called prayer man photo, that's me. That's all me. No one else has put that together or said that or alleged that other than me that I know of. So if anyone disagrees with that or whatever, blame me, not Professor Mellon, that's my putting one and one together. Okay, so now the clip.
Fair enough. Now, by Rabbi Beckham, you do mean Thomas Beckham?
Yes. Thomas Edward Beckham, sometimes Reverend Beckham, sometimes Rabbi Beckham.
I was going to say that. Yes. Okay, fine. But he's an interesting character. How would you explain him to somebody who's going, who the hell is that?
Well, he's been involved in Oswald's life, particularly in New Orleans. That's well known. He's in pictures with Oswald. Mm-hmm. And now the best thing from here would be to play the clip, because that's kind of where it takes off.
To just see, well, what if, or maybe, and I think that's valid to look, given the information that we have. Jim Garrison thought that Oswald did not take a shot. And his argument for that, I mean, it may or may not be scientific, was that there was no paraffin residue on his hands or on his cheek. And so Garrison concluded that he didn't even take the shot. And I have to say that recently somebody came forward to me, a photographer, and he found a photograph at Love Field. We've never really seen the photographs from Love Field when Kennedy arrived in Dallas. And he sees Thomas Edward Beckham in the crowd. Now, you know, it looks like in a mugshot, he placed a mugshot of Beckham at the time onto the bottom so we could compare I mean, it's a dead ringer. If Beckham, now, so we have that. The person I showed that to for verification was a judge in Alabama called Judge Charlie, now retired, Charlie McKnight. And he knew Beckham way back when. A Farewell to Justice, by the way, the original version ends with Thomas Edward Beckham, who was a CIA patsy that was meant to take the place of Oswald, should Oswald have run away, should he have not worked out and not been there, or something like that. Well, Charlie was who verified the photograph, and then he told me he had held back from me. See, the reason is he was an officer of the court, and he couldn't say anything about any of this, so he kept quiet. Finally, he retired. He told me that Thomas Edward Beckham had seen Oswald drinking a Coke outside the Texas School Book Depository 7 seconds before the shots rang out. Take it for what it's worth, and therefore there was no way that, he said, that Oswald could have gotten upstairs to the sixth floor. Now, I know Beckham was involved. I know that. I know that he doesn't even want to be heard from anymore, that he's went into undercover, and he was, I think he regretted that he talked to me for a Farewell to Justice. And one of the things that happened when Oliver Stone, his assistant, was doing the research for the film JFK, and the researcher found Beckham, which was no small, easy thing to do. And he gets on the phone, and she said, "Is this Thomas Edward Beckham?" And he said, "Ma'am, I never heard of anyone by that name." So when you see the film JFK, I also knew that Beckham was a very important figure in this, and he's not in the film.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. And I got two very serious issues with part of what she's saying here. You got a judge verifying that this is the guy. He's at Love Field. How is he at the depository 7 seconds before the shots are fired? He gets there ahead of Kennedy? A little bit difficult to do if he's photographed at Love Field.
Wait a minute. No, the guy said that he's seen Beckham at the airport, I guess. I was more interested in the Beckham's testimony of seeing Oswald on the other side of the parade route drinking
okay.
a Coke.
Well, that's interesting, but how was he in two places at once is my question, or did he speed from Love Field to Dealey Plaza? Because how do you get
him? What are you talking about? He said he's seen Beckham at Love Field, so I would assume this would be when Kennedy was there.
Yeah,
well, how did Kennedy get there?
Well,
probably damn way. He probably drove or walked.
Well,
I don't know.
Here's the problem, right, is that he goes down this parade route, which is not very long, from Love Field to Dealey Plaza, okay? And you're telling me
well,
that Beckham is photographed at the crowd and gets through all of that, gets to a car, okay? And if he's photographed while Kennedy's arriving at Love Field, right, then he's able to get through all of that, get through where the road is blocked off, and get over to Dealey Plaza.
Did you say Beckham's seen who?
Beckham is photographed at Love Field, yes or no, according
Correct.
To what she's saying?
That's what...
Okay, now...
Well, she says some judge seen him...
No, hold on. She got a photograph. I heard the story just like you did. She got a photograph of Kennedy's arrival at Love Field. I mean, somebody else want to correct me here, go ahead. But I'm telling you, she gets a photograph. She says nobody ever saw these photographs before, which is not true, but maybe they never picked up on Beckham being in the crowd. She sees what looks like a dead ringer for Beckham and asks a judge who knew Beckham, is this Beckham in the crowd? This is what she did, according to what she just said. Okay? And then he revealed to her, this judge who knew Beckham, that Beckham was there and saw Oswald drinking a Coke outside 7 seconds before the shots were fired. That means that Beckham, to lay eyes on him, has to be either in Dealey Plaza or very close to Dealey Plaza. All right, I'm assuming, in order to make that, I mean, unless he's got binoculars and you're going to tell me he's far away, okay, something like that.
Yeah, he was there.
But he's there.
He was there, very close.
And I do believe that Beckham was there. Okay, I'm going to tell you that. but I'm not going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do believe Beckham was there, but I got a problem with him being photographed in at Love Field and then getting to Dealey Plaza. I've got a problem with that because I don't see how that would be easy considering all of the interference that somebody would have had unless you were part of that motorcade getting from point A to point B here in this conversation. So Beckham being present in Dealey Plaza is interesting, but Beckham himself, okay, I would contend, is not always consistent in the things that he had said. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm not saying he's lying about this. I'm just saying that it's open.
By his own admission, anything he said in the 60s was a lie. He says he straight up was
lying.
Fred Chrisman told him what to do and say, act crazy and lie your head off.
Exactly.
So anything Beckham said before the 70s, by his own admission, is a lie. Now, where I start taking him credible is when, of course, he was with HSCA, signing statements, offering to take polygraphs.
Right.
Delsa believed him, all that stuff.
No, and I would believe that his interview with Mellon is relatively honest. I wish she would talk to me about now, because I would check with her on this and go over it and see if she still has the interview available, if she's got a tape. Because honestly,
she does.
Yeah, I know, but the problem is she won't talk to me.
She the whole thing is she asked him, "When's the last time you seen Oswald on the tape?" She asked him. He said he was standing in front of the depository drinking a Coke.
Well, I haven't heard it, so I can't say for sure that's on that tape, but
well, wait a minute.
I can check with her, yeah.
But now let's make the leap that Jimmy James makes to Prayer Man. If Oswald was seen in front of the depository drinking a Coke by Beckham, where was Beckham? Didn't you say that Beckham was across the way? Hello?
No, I don't make a statement as to where he was.
I didn't say it.
No, yeah, we had this discussion on last week's show, wasn't it?
What?
Joan Mellon is basing what she said off hearsay, okay?
No,
Beckham. Beckham. No, wait a minute. Beckham is saying he saw Oswald in front of the school book depository 7 seconds before the gunshot started. Where was Beckham? That's my question. Where was Beckham that he could have seen Oswald in front of the building? Because we have footage just a few seconds before this thing, and someone has taken an image from that film and blown it up and said, okay, there's a guy standing there in a doorway. That's got to be Oswald. That's how we've made that leap. So where was Beckham that he saw Oswald is my question.
I don't see what's so complicated about this, BP. He was across on the other side of the parade.
If he was on the other side of the parade route, how can he pick Oswald out in a recessed doorway in the Texas School Book Depository? I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. That's why I don't believe it. There's no evidence whatsoever.
Well, if he's,
that Oswald was outside,
well, it
we've
depends.
Got a guy across the street that says he saw him.
Well, that's not
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
The guy's there.
What do you mean it's not correct?
Go ahead, Jimmy James. Go ahead.
Kemp's done an excellent work. Hold on here. Let me pull up his little website so I can get the right name.
See, the thing is, if Beckham is on the corner, okay, and you know what I'm talking about. There's the corner across the street there where you have the split where you can either go into the parking lot or you can turn down Elm.
Right.
Okay, if he's on that corner, I believe he could see him in the recessed doorway if he's on that corner.
if he's on that corner.
Right.
But I don't think he's on that corner. If he's on that corner, you'd see him in the photographs we have of that corner.
Well, see, I was just going to say, I have never seen him in the photographs that where he should be if he's there. Now, maybe I missed him. I'm not saying that, you know, I did a hard search for him specifically, but I've never taken note of a guy who looked like Beckham in that vicinity that I'm talking about. And I have sat and done the whole thing where we've, you know, laid out the maps and we've done the putting the figures on the topographical map and the whole bit where we laid out everybody from Zapruder.
I think we're good. Wait. The whole thing was I just wanted to point out that Professor Mellon did not bring up Prayer Man.
No,
that
she
was
didn't.
Me using unintentional, using the testimony of Beckham to cross-collaborate the picture through time and space. In other words, it was completely unintentional that Beckham did that. And now I just wanted to read one thing from Marina Oswald's Wikipedia page.
Oh, God.
Though she has not formally recanted any of her Warren Commission testimony, Marina has said she now believes that Oswald was completely innocent in the murders of Kennedy and Tippit, and that the prayer man, seen on the steps of the book depository at the time of the assassination, was Lee. Now, that's already been cut from the other before, because before they described the situation where the two researchers, Ed Ledoux, went and showed her the video, and without them even saying anything, she pointed to the figure and said, that's Lee. Mm-hmm. But they've already edited Wikipedia, apparently.
Okay. Wait a minute. The footage showing Prayer Man has not been, if you look at the footage, it doesn't even show that individual back in the corner. You have to enhance the photo to bring that person out. So is there a version of an enhanced film out there that I haven't seen yet? Because I don't know of one.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's the Parnell film, there's the Wiggins film, there's the damn
all. Right, and these stills, wait a minute, these clips that have been pulled out by Bart, what's his name, and the rest of them that are just screaming this prayer man crap, have all taken photos that have been enhanced and manipulated. You cannot see Prayer Man in the actual footage filmed. You can't. It's not there. You have to stop frame it and start blowing stuff up and manipulating it to get that image to come out. So I'd be curious to know who has seen that footage and sees Prayer Man in that raw footage.
Well, and the problem,
I've yet to see it.
Okay, now the problem with doing what it is you're talking about and the stuff that like Leroy Blevins used to do and all these guys have done with these still, you know, images, all right, from these, you can blow these things up. And I'm telling you now, that there are artifacts in there that look like something that cannot even physically be possibly there. Okay, there's all kinds of crap that goes on once you start blowing these things up. Okay, the little drips and drabs of the original process of creating the film, okay, creating the negative in the first place, creates all these bizarre little artifacts, the codec process, all right? And you can see people and dogs and all kinds of crap you think. It's a Rorschach test. It's a freaking nightmare is what it is. This is why I don't stand with this prayer man stuff. I can't. And I've had many people try to very logically convince me, and they made a few interesting arguments. I gotta give it to them. But when they bring out these photographs, game over. Because every single time, if you take and you blow them up, not with digital technology like now, but in the original sense, if you do this stuff like Howard Weisberg had to do, okay, which is where I totally understand why he thought the doorway man was the doorway man. Based on the technology he was dealing with, based on what it was, I get it. But he's not.
Well, but that's just it, though. Before it was all said and done, Weisberg admitted that it was Billy Lovelady. After he saw the other footage of him milling around in front of the school book depository, he admitted that it was Billy Lovelady that was in that doorway and not Oswald.
Well, it's just like what we had to deal with that guy who's from Georgia, Frigg. What is his name? The blonde-haired guy.
it's two different people, though. Doorway man and the prayer man are two different people.
No, I know. I'm just pointing to another example of where the blowing up and manipulating of these little itty-bitty pieces of the original film, whether it's still photos or the motion pictures, there is a messy process that goes on that creates artifacts. And in order to like filter out the artifacts before you start screwing around with it and blowing it up bigger and bigger is something that hardly anybody does. And if you take these things and keep blowing them up, you can find all kinds of stuff. I could put dogs. I could probably put 15 dogs in Dealey Plaza if you want. No problem. And we could have a whole theory about how there were teams of dogs, if you like. Look, I got photographs. If you blow them up, you can see the little dogs here. There's a dog's head here. There's dogs sniffing around. This guy's probably holding the leash. I'm telling you, I've done this.
Okus Campbell is the vice president of the trade school book depository. He said he's seen Oswald on the first floor and walk out. What about that? That sounds pretty damn close to what I'm talking about.
Yeah, when did he see that?
No, it's not, because there were several people that saw Oswald on the first floor.
First?
He took the first floor, took the stairs. That's another thing. Everybody says, well, how did Oswald know that Billy Lovelady and everybody was standing outside? Well, he walked through the lobby to go upstairs to get a drink. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. You walk through a lobby that's got glass. He sees everybody standing in that doorway. He moseyed on upstairs and went and got his Coca-Cola. There were several people that saw Oswald on the first floor.
Well,
there were several people that saw him up on the fifth floor and the sixth floor right before they all broke for lunch.
You know why
the point is, Oswald claimed the whole time that he was in on the first floor till he went up to get a soda pop.
You know why it doesn't make sense?
But nobody wants to believe him.
You know why it doesn't make sense to these people that are going, you know, oh, well, how could he have known that? Very easy. They don't realize that the way that entranceway is now and the way it's been for a long time is not the original configuration. If you look at a photograph
exactly
from 63 and then imagine, yeah, you can see easily how he would have known that. That's not a problem. He knew it was out front over there. He could see from back there. The only thing that confuses the hell out of me, really, is what's his name? Making that statement at that mock trial. The guy who drove him, Lenny May Randall's freaking brother. Good God, Buell Wesley Frazier. The only thing that confuses me about Buell Wesley Frazier is he says, yeah, Oswald is behind me in the doorway. Well, maybe he was, but here's the problem. Timelines. Okay, because somebody sees him walk out a door, they think they see him before or after the assassination, fine. But there is a big difference, and we know we have a landmark, unless you don't believe Marion Baker. Which, by the way, I talked to Marion Baker. I believe Marion Baker. And I believe his official story, and I believe that he thought he had a soda in his hand, and everything else. 90 seconds. 90 seconds, approximately. He's got a gun on him on the second floor. I absolutely believe that. So you gotta make everything else work from there.
Wait a minute, Chuck. Can I ask you one question? There's a photo of a cop clearly talking to a guy in a white T-shirt right after the stuff hit the fan. Then who was that? What was going on there?
A bunch of those guys were in white T-shirts.
That's true. But this was a white guy.
Yeah.
A Oswald prayer type guy. Wink, wink.
Yeah, it's not Oswald, though. I don't think so. I
think it is.
Okay, look. And here's the thing. With these blurry-ass images, I can't, absolutely tell you you're wrong. But if we go with...
Well, I'm just saying it's 80-20. I'm not 100... Like, you know, B. Pete's 100% opposed to the prayer man.
Well,
I'm 80-20 on the thing.
Look, I'm opposed to it, too, because I just don't see the evidence to support it. And the thing is, all right.
I just gave you two huge pieces.
Yeah, but I don't take that as substantial
What are these two huge pieces of evidence? Beckham saying he saw him from across the street, but nobody can tell me where Beckham was?
I mean, I don't, what evidence? There's no evidence that Oswald was outside when his shots were taken. He was asked by Kelly and he told him specifically, no, I did not see the parade. I wasn't out there.
Okay.
Look, but no one wants to believe
said
Oswald.
He did see the parade.
But again,
no, he did not.
Why
no,
did
wait
Oswald
a minute. You
not watch the
where did Oswald say that he watched the parade from? Where? I've been this argument's been going on for 60 years.
Is he goofy?
Where?
Hey, why would he not watch a president? Why would he not step outside and watch a presidential parade happening 10 feet from him practically? Why wouldn't he?
Why would he and tell everybody he didn't? Why would he put himself in the building from where the shot? Wait a minute. Why would he put himself without an alibi?
Why
would he?
We have no idea what that man
said. Are you done? Why would he put himself in the building with no alibi from where the shots were taken if he wasn't in the building? And every opportunity that he had to say, I wasn't in the building, he didn't take it.
He wasn't in the building.
Well, look,
you're going completely what? By the cops' notes and their testimony? Are you crazy?
No, I don't. I don't go by their notes and their testimony because there's conflicts in there, and I get it. But some of the cops that I spoke to, I also understand there is a difference between a civilian who is telling a story and a cop who is supposed to be noting the order of events and specifics. There is a difference between them. And I'm not saying that they're all truthful. I'm not saying that they're all, you know, more just absolutely accurate. But there is a big difference. And like I said, I believe Marion Baker. I use him as a very serious, this is a point in the timeline you have to contend with. I don't care what
it
your is. Story
is. And not only that, not only Marion Baker, but you have to take into consideration the lady who was in the office when Oswald left the lunchroom and went through that office out to the front to go down the stairs. How could he be there? Baker just let him go and went up the stairs up the back, and Oswald walked towards the front, seen by someone in that office, and spoke to him. So how do you reconcile him being there then, but yet he was out front 7 seconds before the shots happened? It's impossible.
There is
everything you just said happened before the assassination, BP.
No,
kind of was
no.
The whole point of the girl on
how
the
did
stairs.
He
be,
Harry
did
Baker
he
is after the assassination.
How did he meet a cop on the
he
second floor lunchroom before
floor.
The assassination?
There's a picture of him getting yelled at by a cop on the first floor.
No, there's not.
But this is what
show
I'm telling
the picture.
You.
I'd love send yeah. The link. Put the link to the picture on the room.
See, but you would require Marion Baker and Roy Truly both telling the same BS story pretty consistently to have to
not
shrug
only that,
that
the
off.
Secretary
yeah.
In the office that saw
the
him just afterwards.
Okay, you're saying they're both
Truly
liars. They're both lying.
Truly was oh absolutely.
Okay.
Did you know how Rita he was a very racist man, not a real great guy.
Oh, Truly? Yeah, I know that. And Baker was not a pleasant dude. I'll give you that.
Sure.
You know,
they
I
were
mean,
men of their times.
Well, no, I'll tell you the funniest thing is that he told me, you know, if I knew that little bastard was going to be so much trouble, I would have shot the son of a bitch myself. You know, that's what he said to me. You know, that's what he said.
You know, wait a minute. Before we get any further into this, I got to ask Jimmy a question. Jimmy, are you of the impression or support the theory that the whole lunchroom incident never took place?
Oh, there's a good question. Is that what you think, Jimmy James?
It could have took place, as in that he walked right from the outside in
okay,
and walked into that little room.
So
then that's when that dude seen him, and then maybe
So let's be specific about this.
That's when he confronted them in front of the door, apparently.
So let's be specific. Not in front of the door quite. He sees.
No, they were in
through,
the they were in the lunchroom.
He sees through the small window on the door that something is moving in that snack room. Okay? So he charges in there with truly in tow. This is Marion Baker. Charges in there with truly in tow with his weapon drawn, which he already had drawn before that. Okay? But with his weapon drawn, and he bursts through the door and asks Truly, do you know this man? Does he work here? Basically. I may have the quote a little bit wrong. But either way, do you know this man? Does he work here? Truly says yes. And Baker moves on. Baker says that Oswald was by the soda machine, and at one point says he had a soda in his hand. At another point said didn't say he had a soda in his hand, depending on which a copy of his report you read, etc. But either way, he's there at the soda machine at that time. And if you time it out, it would be about 90 seconds after the shots were fired, if you give Baker enough time to run in there like he did. And all that, and do all the stuff like grabbing Truly, which he did on the first floor. Okay? And then he goes up that stairwell and then sees him through that opening in that door and does that. Do you think that that did or did not happen, Jimmy James?
I agree that's what the Warren Commission says happened.
Oh, well, we know that. That's a certainty. Nobody can argue that that's what the Warren Commission says happened. But do you think that that's what occurred?
That's not the question. The question is, do you think it happened?
I'll say that I'm at 50-50. I don't think it happened exactly as how they put down there. I think he was confronted. That crazy cop was pushing people out of the way, this, that, and the other. Oh, I happened to see the fuzzy figure through a darkened window that had grime on it, and it stopped me in my tracks.
Did you read?
Yeah, okay.
Did you read his report? Not the Warren Commission report, but did you read what he filed with the DPD?
Yeah, a million years ago.
Okay, fair enough. I'm just asking if you ever read it. And you think that he filed a false report there, or you think it's a 50-50, it's whether it's false or not?
Well, wait a minute now. My understanding is that there was a later report. Was it there a first report and then a later report where they changed the times?
There's three versions of it that I know of. One of them is purely handwritten.
Okay.
One of them is partially handwritten and partially typed, and one of them is typed, which is not unusual for the paperwork with the DPD at the time. That's what would happen is quite often. Now, they didn't always file every report, but Baker did file three versions of that report, to the best of my knowledge. And there are minor differences in each one of those reports, actually.
And the biggest difference is that initially he said he had a Coke, and then he changed that. He was getting a Coke.
That's a striking
difference.
The
thing is right after that happened, Oswald left the lunchroom, and he went through the office. And he had words spoken to him from the individual in that office. So if you take those two things right there, how is it that he could be there but yet be outside right before the shots were fired?
Well,
it's impossible.
No, we don't
totally
have
it. Impossible.
The only opening there is that we don't have an exact accounting, independent of Oswald, right, as to his whereabouts for...
Statements by everybody that was standing in that doorway that they could contact.
Oh,
and
I know.
No one,
yeah.
To this day, no one in that doorway put Oswald in that doorway.
Well,
nobody.
And even, frankly, Harold Norman and those guys, Jarman, Norman, and I forget the third guy. But
Gibbons.
Gibbons, there you go. The third guy, Norman, was the most talkative of them. And I would tell you that, I can account for him a little earlier than those couple of minutes, but I got a couple of missing minutes, even on my own accounting, before he gets to that soda machine. Now, if we're trying to say that he's there during that time, it's pretty tight, but I would need to see something more than a blurry image that, again, you can raise up and manipulate all sorts of different ways. Somebody, and this is the tough thing, to try and get...
Here's a couple points.
Well, let me throw something to you, though. Let me throw something to you, though, that I really wish I could see done. If somebody who has no opinion and no fear, okay, about this case, would get a hold of some of the original materials and redevelop them with the old process, okay, and do it cleanly, efficiently, very carefully, I would love to see what the results are. Because even trying to take the x-rays, copies of x-rays, to people that are x-ray technicians, I had fun with that for years. All sorts of experts who should have been able to tell me about the fractures and all these different things. You show it to them, and they'll tell you stuff, and then tell them that it's, you know, part of the Kennedy case, and their entire opinion can change. No problem. And then they'll start arguing about different things regarding the way the x-rays developed and how it looks. Is it legitimate? Is it a fair copy? And this is a chronic problem with the photography and the films, which is why, you know, quite sadly, as much as, you know, Grodin has done us a lot of favors, him being the only guy who has, you know, massive access to all this stuff is not helpful. We need an independent person that could redevelop this evidence set. And I'd love to see an array developed by an independent person of all these people in the plaza again, you know, somebody redoing it so that we don't have all these artifacts from development. But that hasn't happened. Anyway, we've gone deep into minutiae. Anybody who's like a deep research person on JFK has probably enjoyed this discussion. But Nature Boy, did we put you to sleep? Maybe Nature Boy dropped off. I don't know.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, there he is. Did we put you to sleep, Nature Boy?
No, I was just listening to the conversation, actually. And I'm by no means even close to being a JFK expert, so it was interesting to hear you guys talk about that.
Well, anyways, Jimmy James, I don't know, prayer man, we're going to have to live to fight about this one another day. But I'm getting the feeling that you're sort of on the side of the people that believe that Oswald may have indeed been photographed outside of the school book depository at the time of the shooting, in one way or another. Is that right or wrong?
Like I said, I'm leading 80%, yes.
80, okay. So it's 80-20 to you. All right, well, hey, look, fair enough. But you know what's kind of unfair, sort of, is that we're almost out of time. And I'd like to give everybody a chance to, you know, give a sort of final word. I know we went deep into JFK land, probably lost a whole bunch of people, but kept some. It's interesting, by the way, if you're not into the JFK case, though, to just really witness how you can get so deep into the evidence on any of these things. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's this or the videotape of what happened on 9/11, or if it's, you know, photographic evidence of Jeffrey Epstein's body being wheeled out of a prison, or so on and so forth. Okay, or even that crazy individual out there that is telling us that, I just hit a button for no reason. I'm having trouble with my mouse. Sorry, guys. Anyways, even if it's this one crazy lady out there is trying to tell us that, you know, the whole George Floyd thing was a completely staged and fabricated Hollywood event, can't swim with it. But gotta tell you, this sort of confusion, this sort of stuff is easy to get yourself lost in when trying to examine any of these things that are of significance. Anyhow, I got a lot of podcasts and things, not a lot actually from this week, because Jack Blood did not show up. Mike and Larry both had the flu on Thursday. We had a Wednesday wild card, but we didn't do a Tuesday show. I did a DJ show instead. And I can't repost the DJ shows. So there's only a handful of podcasts that are going to come out this week, including this show. Really appreciate the fact that people have supported me over the year. those of you that have, kind of disappointed as well, because sadly, I've had to reach out to friends very specifically to keep myself going at certain points. And not going to name names, but you know what? If it wasn't for them, I probably would have quit already. I'm very seriously considering making, you know, 10 years be the end of this whole experiment. I know that Chris Graves will be fine. He's doing well with other networks and things. He doesn't need the network to do his show. He can do Get Mad somewhere else. And who knows, maybe it'll be better. He's working with the New Prisoners guys and is becoming a kind of a, well, an interesting and sought-after guest on various podcasts. So Chris is doing well. Aaron Franz, like a cat, no matter what, I am very sure he would land on his feet anywhere. And he doesn't need me, nor does the Uncle Show need me. You know, Jack Blood certainly doesn't need me, and his weird attitude and the fact that he's depressed and wanted to let his listeners know that I like it when he's depressed because he sounds better. You know, it's not as though I'm keeping him captive, and who knows? Maybe he'd be better off elsewhere. And I don't know. Maybe the Ocelli effect has outlived its usefulness. I'd like to get feedback from you guys on this. And maybe when we do the little get-together in Dallas, which I definitely want to do, and really I'm looking forward to taking a road trip with BP. more than anything, I want others to join us. I got other people saying they'll meet us in Dallas. Listeners.
I was going
to
let you drive.
Yeah. We can do that, too. you know.
Well, be sure to get the insurance on the rental car.
You'll have a story to tell, my friend. I let the blind guy drive. Oh, yes. How about that? You know, and what are they going to
do? I don't know, officer. I was asleep.
I was asleep.
I
the blind
had no idea
guy,
how fast he was going.
The blind guy took the wheel, and what are you going to do? Take his license? Good. Yeah, I got you. Anyway. I'm looking forward to that. I think that we should do that. We are going to do that. If I'm breathing, I'm gonna get to Dallas with your help, BP, and all that. So I think we should do that. But I really want to know, guys, have I outlived my usefulness? Because I'll tell you just really quick, and I know I'm just taking up a lot of time here, but I want to turn it over to everybody and shut my mouth and close out the show in just a moment. Before I do, though, I was listening to Graves on a podcast talking about the Kennedy case, and he made a handful of mistakes that I'm like, you know what, this is my friend, and I can't even educate him. And it's not a matter of opinion. Like, you know, I'm having a discussion here with Jimmy James tonight, and we had a little bit, you know, got a little heated with BP for a second. But, I mean, these are matters of opinion and minutia and things like that. But he had stuff that was just wrong to say. If you're being, you know, ethical about the stuff that you're putting out as fact, he made some mistakes, and they're honest mistakes. But even people that are in my orbit, I can't seem to educate them about some of the mistakes they're making. There are things that are factual that we know, you know, unless you're one of these idiots that wants to tell me that, you know, Kennedy didn't really die and he actually came back as Jimmy Carter. You know, I mean, look, if you're like that, I can't help you. But honestly, if we're trying to educate people about this stuff and we're trying to enter a legitimate counter narrative to the official explanations of anything, and we're not able to do it better, and we're not able to make that point, maybe I'm not helping anybody, is all I'm saying. And due to the lack of support, and due to the lack of interest, and due to the lack of being invited onto other talk shows, and due to the fact that certain guests that I should have been able to get, I'm not able to get. They don't respond to me, even though they did in the past, things like that. I got to tell you, I'm starting to feel like maybe I've outlived my usefulness doing this. So I want to know, is that the case? Or should I just be a producer? Or should I just shut the hell up and go find something better to do with my life? You know, I'm willing to take all that feedback one way or another, and I don't want anybody begging me to stay. I want to know. I want to know if this is useful anymore, if this is actually doing something anymore, because I'm feeling like I'm banging my head up against the wall. I'm banging my head right up against the wall. When somebody says, factually, that George DeMorn Shields was Lee Harvey Oswald's CIA handler, you can't make that statement as a matter of fact. Okay? You can't back it up. You can create certain inferences. And you could say that, in my opinion, he might have been one of the people that handled him on behalf of the CIA. That's a different statement than saying that he's Lee Harvey Oswald's handler. It just is.
Oh, that's all. But that's what you read in print nowadays.
But that's the thing.
I read that in an article just the night before last. Someone, those exact words, that
yeah.
Morenfield was Oswald's handler.
But that's the thing, is if I can't get my friends to state those things properly, what am I doing? Am I having any influence anymore? I mean, I used to. And I know that there are certain people that, yeah, well, what does this guy know? He's blind. He's got a high school education from a crap high school in New Jersey. He doesn't know anything. Fair enough. If that's where we're at, cool. But, you know, I used to get that from academics and certain people whose names you know. In the community, I'm pretty sure that basically sums up, like, say, Jeff Morley's opinion of me, which is fine. I'm not legitimate because I'm not a journalist like he was. And I'm not legitimate because I'm not an author like he is. And I'm not as educated as him. And therefore, he kind of scoffs at me a little bit. And I know that. And yet, he still didn't show up when he publicly said he was going to debate me on my show. And meanwhile, I'm on this guy's side. Anyway, I'm just asking, is this making a difference anymore? Because if it isn't, I don't know. Maybe there's something else I should be doing. Maybe there's something else you guys could be doing. Maybe it's a waste of time. Is it worth it to put my money, my effort, and to be coming to you guys and asking you to help me with it if it's not really making any difference anymore? Has it outlived its usefulness? Has the Ocelli effect outlived its usefulness after 10 years? I want to know. Either way, I want to celebrate that in Dallas in 2023, whether it's, you know, a farewell after 10 years or let's see what we can do next. I want to be there for the 60th anniversary. I want to go on this road trip with BP. I want anybody and everybody who can hear the sound of my voice right now. If you can make it to Dallas, come and hang out with us. Seriously, I'm, you know, look, I can't guarantee BP to want to hang out with all of you. I don't know. I can't guarantee if Nature Boy wants to come from California, if he's going to want to hang out with all of you. I can't, but I'll tell you this. If you come up to me and you tell me, you know what, I listen to your show, whatever, and, you know, you're in Dallas at the same time I am, I'll hang out with you at least for a little bit. We can talk, we can chill, we can do stuff, and who knows? There may be other things that could be planned and done. There's other podcasters that are, I think, my allies who have said that they will go. Could be a really interesting meetup, and I think we could have a good time. And, BP, I'm just saying, I don't want to speak for you, you know? I mean, if Spent Kent...
Well, I understand that.
If Spent Kent shows up, you know, I love the guy, but, you know, I don't know if I can listen to another damn kayaking story. If he shows up, I'll hang out with him for a while. I'm not saying all weekend, but I'll hang out with him for a while. You know, I can't guarantee BP won't go, you know what, I need to go get a sandwich and, you know, just be gone.
You might be having to post bail once I start hawking, once I start.
If we go to Judy's.
Walt Brown's book on Dead Judy's venue.
If we go to Judy's, little, you know, conference and, bring Walt Brown's books, I mean, look, we might need you to come bail us out. We might need you to, you know, back us up. I don't know if a fist fight will ensue. Might be entertaining. You know, I'm sure there's going to be news cameras around. Who knows? Maybe we'll make the news.
I'm getting too old for fist fights. It's just, it's not productive.
Yeah, but every once in a while, it's good to dust them off, man. Anyway.
Well, that's true.
You know, but I'm not even saying, look, I'm not looking to get into fights. I'm not a tough guy. You know, I never have claimed to be a tough guy, but you know, you do what you got to do. I'm just saying, the adventure that week would be really great, and I want to do it, and I hope that we're gonna, and I hope I'm still breathing at that time to do it. But either way, I want to know, do I need to continue this, or should I be looking at closing it out? You know? Let's get this person on for the last time. Let's recap this for the last time. Is that what I should be doing? Should I be done? I want to hear from everybody about this, and I don't mean the people on this call. You know, these are my friends that I can talk to more often. I mean, you out there listening, who never contacts me, who has never made a donation, but I know you're listening because, believe me, if only half of you ever sent me a dollar that actually download this show and listen to it and everything else, I wouldn't have to ask for donations, ever. I'd be doing fine. And I could probably move even to a better neighborhood. Because I'm on the south side of Macon. You know, look it up. Anyhow, I'm just saying, that's the way it is. So I want to know about that. I'm very serious about it. And I'm not trying to do this to get people to beg me to stay. I just want to know, is it serving a purpose for you? Are you learning anything? Is it something different from what you're getting elsewhere? Or, you know, is this thing obsolete now? Is the talk show that I do, is the network that I'm running obsolete? Tell me. That's all I'm asking. Anyways, BP, as my co-host, I'd really love it. I know I put a lot on you tonight, and sometimes I did get a complaint a couple of weeks ago that I don't let you talk enough. But I'd very much like it if you gave Jimmy James and Nature Boy a final shout-out. I'll check the phone lines. We've now run overtime a little bit, but we started late. Sorry about that. But, you know, before I shut my mouth, finally, I just want to say, no matter what holiday you think it is or what part of the year you think it is or which God you're praying to, I don't even care. I hope that you're well. And at this time, I have very warm sentiments that I hope everybody can enjoy for a moment, whether it's because you're seeing family or you're getting a present or, you know what, you're just grateful to be alive. I note that in the chat room, our friend Amir popped up to let us know, and I'm grateful to hear that he has electricity, as a lot of people in Ukraine do not. Amir, at some point I'm going to talk to you offline when maybe you're not as busy and let you know about the first negative nasty allegedly from Ukraine email I ever got, because I get about 100 emails a day. And I do try to read them all. I do try to respond to them all. I know I'm a little behind at the moment, but I'll get to them all. But anyway, my way of basically roundabout, big, long-winded way of saying that at this time of year, I hope that you're well. I hope that you're not feeling down simply because of the change of weather or the fact that the holidays suck or whatever else. I'm trying to make light of things and put a little comedy on the stream in between the shows, if you haven't noticed. Maybe some people don't always appreciate my sense of humor, but there it is. So there you go. I hope that everybody is really, truly well and that you're going to survive into the next year, because I intend to. And don't speak for fate or anything like that, but I want to know about the future of the show and all that, yes. But chiefly, I hope that everybody's doing well. I hope that you are in a better place, you know, now than you were before. I hope that things will improve for you no matter what the case is, no matter who you are, where you are, when you are. So, BP, why don't you give these guys their last shout-out and, of course, take your own turn, and then I'll just play the outro music and be done.
All righty. Jimmy, since you were the first in, I put you first up here going out. Any final words?
Well, everyone, I guess, needs to write in and cheer Chuck up. Your show definitely serves a purpose. Right off the bat, I could tell you that my interest in etymology started from your show. Let's see, your JFK series on the medical stuff helped me because I despise studying the medical evidence. Nice little cheat sheet there. And etc. So everyone else who appreciates Chuck, write them and tell them. Other than that, fellas, remember, if the women don't find you handsome, let them at least find you handy.
That is a solid, solid piece of advice right there. If you can't be handsome, at least be handy. I like it. That's a T-shirt, baby. That is a T-shirt. Jimmy James, thank you so much.
Definitely, definitely. Nature Boy, what you got for us closing out tonight?
Well, thanks for letting me be part of this. This is kind of one of the highlights of my Friday night. Yeah, I've got an old man's social life. But as always, I had a good time. And to all the listeners out there, I understand everything's tight. But if you can't buy Chuck a cup of coffee, become a member, hey, at least send him an email and just let him know what he means to you, because the numbers don't lie. There's a lot of us out there. So just wish him a Merry Christmas, and I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, and most importantly, God, please give us a Happy New Year. Good night, everybody.
Nature Boy with that incredible voice.
All right, thank you there, Nature Boy.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, yep, definitely, man. So, BP, you know, I always appreciate how you like to close things out. And let's see, we get together one more time before this year's over. Maybe we should do a 2022 wrap-up show, right? Try and focus if we can.
Yeah, we next can. Week. Yeah, definitely next Friday. We can wrap up what we've covered over the years, just events of the years, things that have happened. We've covered a lot of crap, you know, the past 52 weeks or 51 weeks. So I'm looking forward to the end of this year. It has been a very busy, hectic year for me with work and all. I thoroughly enjoy the Friday nights. I look forward to it. You know, maybe we do need to cover some topics a little more that are in the news. And I know we hate getting on those topics because at the end result, we haven't changed anything and we're basically just sitting around bitching about it, but somebody's got to bitch about it. And at least we do it with style. So, you know, that being said, I hope everybody out there has a wonderful holiday, whatever holiday you celebrate. You know, make the best of it. Reach out to somebody you haven't talked to in a while. Make some contact. You know, start getting those networks back together that you used to have over the years. I mean, there's a lot of people I've lost contact with that here it just seems like in the past year they've popped back up and we've caught up. And, you know, it's a good feeling to know that people you cared about a long time ago are still doing well. And in that respect, you know, get a hold of Chuck. Email him. Send him a message off, go to his website, hit the contact button, send him that message, let him know that you're out there listening. You know, the regulars here on Friday night have become kind of like a family. It's a shame we don't hear as many of the members that we used to. Hopefully that can change in the new year, but, you know, everybody do what you can.
GoToChili.com. Yeah. And by the way, special shout out to Vance, because we haven't heard from Vanarchy in a bit. I love when that guy calls in, and I really miss him, actually. So, Vance, please get in touch with us. Anybody else who ever wants to join us, I mean, this is the night to do it. I know I've opened up phone lines on other nights, but we've tried to do this. And frankly, it's been interesting whole way through because, you know, outside of Mike Swanson, Mike Swanson and Larry Hancock, who has been with me longer as a co-host than BP? Nobody. So there you go. And BP has been extremely flexible. There you have it. I mean, you know, Mike and I have covered some interesting territory, but we don't usually take calls and deal with the randomness of things. For that, I got this guy. And I'm really, really grateful to have had you along.
Well, that's something I've looked forward to. You know, I consider it an honor to be able to sit here and spend 2 hours just, if nothing else, just bullshitting with you all night. So, you know, I look forward to it. We cover a lot of topics. Both you and I have a lot of knowledge on subjects ranging from cooking to assassinations. And it's nice to be able to sit down and talk to somebody who it's obvious to everybody out there. We don't agree about everything. We agree on a lot of stuff that a lot of people didn't think we did. Mm. But we still have our moments, and Jimmy and I can sit there and argue about Prayer Man all day long, but it's nice to engage in the conversation and the back and forth and trying to pick each other's brains to find out exactly where somebody stands on a position. So I have been honored for the past couple of years to be part of Friday nights. I look forward to it. I hope that what we're doing is an entertaining aspect to people. Sometimes I'm sure they call up just to see if we're going to get into an argument over something. So, you know, that being said, I'm looking forward to the new year. I'm looking forward to this part of the new year and, willing to do anything we can to make it better. So let's leave tonight and everybody have a nice, happy holiday, and we'll meet back here next Friday and do it again.
There you go. And next time we meet, we'll try and, like I said, recap the entirety of the year. So. That's that, and that's the week that was, I guess. I gotta steal a phrase here and there, don't I? Anyway, it's all done. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. So no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, and what your pronouns might particularly be, I wish you well. Good night.
Up now, and I didn't wake up till just a little while ago.
Okay, fair warning.
I turned it on, and I was listening to it at the end.
Okay, fair warning to everybody on the call. I just put us back on the live stream. So, Vance, I mentioned you, and you called. That's all I'm saying, and I'm not going to try and keep you and do a whole thing here because I'm exhausted, and B. Pete is probably tired, too. He's had a rough week, I think, at work and all.
Yeah, me too. I'm about two steps away from bed, gentlemen. It's been a long week for me, and yeah. I didn't sleep for nothing last night.
I need something to eat. I got to sort that out, and I got to sort out the rest of what I got to do for Christmas and whatnot. But really fast, I want to thank everybody again for contributing and all that. But Vance Vanerkey, man, you got to join us on a Friday night. This sometime soon, okay?
Well, that's why I called in, because I've been posting on the Skype, you know, stuff here and there, and I've been dealing with, I got colon cancer, and you know, it's just been kind of something that's kind of consumed for my life, and you know, I've just been kind of letting, you know, stuff anyway, you know what I'm saying, it's just kind of changed up everything, and my sleep pattern's been off, and trying to get that back all in order, but luckily my last biopsy came back non-malignant or whatever, so hopefully got a pretty good chance of, it's not a good chance, but I still got a chance of not having to have any major like colonoscopy or anything like that, but so that's what's been keeping me away. It's nothing personal, and
I got you, man. I'm sorry, I'm not in the Skype group anymore.
I'm getting a lot better.
Yeah, I'm not in the Skype group anymore because it was driving me nuts. Like I was interrupting stuff when I was broadcasting, so I pulled myself out of Skype group, so I didn't see any of that. I didn't know that. So you know, my apologies there, but I was just shouting out to you because honestly, I just miss hearing from you. So I'm gonna take us off air here, guys, and leave it at that. And again, we already said
all
our
right.
good nights. So
all right,
thanks.
Well, y'all have. You got your electricity on. You're still around, bro. So keep strong.
Exactly.
And
stay
I'll
strong.
I'll talk to y'all later.
Stay strong, Amir. Exactly. Everybody, good night.